Welcome back to The Edge Show, episode 62. I'm Simon Perryman, joined again by Rick.
Again, it's been ages since we've done this.
You've been on the road,
man,
for so long. I know. I've been traveling all over as well. It's been quite a trek.
I'm glad to be here.
Great.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with the news. First thing, we have an event coming up next week on Tuesday, which is a live Q&A for System Center 2012.
That's May 21st.
That is May 21st, 2013. I know we get lots of replays years out of all this cool stuff, so just clarify the year as well, 2013. And essentially, it's an opportunity for you to ask any type of questions that you have about any of the System Center products. So what we're basically doing is myself and Justin Incarnato, one of the senior program managers from System Center Orchestrator, will be addressing some of the most common questions that we see. Meanwhile, we'll have a huge team of System Center experts able to answer your specific questions in our live chat room. So a great opportunity for you to interface with the product group, the engineers, and many of the other people that actually built and designed the product.
Following right along, number two is actually this small little thing you might have heard of before. It is called TechEd North America, June 3rd to June 6th, and also TechEd Europe, 25th to the 28th. North America is going to be in New Orleans, and TechEd Europe is going to be in Madrid. And in case you want to get in there and get registered, because we're obviously still very much interested in having you register, it is msteched.com for the website. And there's this little tiny thing called a countdown show that I happen to be part of that you can also watch for all the latest updates and everything else that's going on, all the tidbits for where to go off and find out more information about TechEd Europe and TechEd North America. Go out, register, get her done.
Great. Well, one of the most common things that we do at TechEds, of course, I have the hands-on lab environment, one of the most popular areas.
Yeah.
And we also wanted to offer these hands-on labs available online to people that aren't even part of the event.
Mm-hmm.
So we've recently released 5 new virtual labs as part of our TechNet Eval Center under System Center. And this will give you an opportunity to explore the different System Center 2012 SP1 components. So looking at the base configuration, building the infrastructure, configuring that infrastructure for a private cloud, deploying services and applications, and finally, automation throughout the stack. So a great real-life hands-on lab experience available here.
Hot off the press is a new blog post that actually has talked about the next version of Windows.
It keeps getting better.
Keeps getting better and bigger and crazier. It's a blog post that went up on the Windows blog that talks about the official name. The official name is not going to be Windows Blue. That is obviously the code name that was used for development. It will be Windows 8.1. Now, the interesting thing is that there will be a preview release available in the end of June that for people that are attending Build, and will also be available for download elsewhere. But there will also be an update for Windows RT and Surface RT devices as well. That will be delivered through an online mechanism. So lots of really cool stuff. Windows 8.1 is the new name. And that's about all I can say right now without getting fired.
And you said coming out in about a month, end of June type of frame.
It's the end of June time frame. It's basically the Build conference taking place in San Fran.
Excellent. Well, next thing we want to announce is another kind of integration here. It's integration with Amazon Web Services through our System Center Operations Manager. Now, our Operations Manager gives us the ability to monitor different components, whether it's your server, whether it's a piece of application, a piece of hardware. But we wanted to extend this further and actually do monitoring up in the cloud. But further than that, we know we can monitor Windows Azure. We wanted to put some proof of concepts out there that we can monitor anything and really work with any type of third party, any other type of integration. And so with this management pack, we're actually going to be looking at two distinct areas of service availability. First is the service availability for the AWS cloud itself, making sure that the cloud is healthy. And secondly, it's service availability for your own VMs, your own storage, your own components that you're running up in AWS. So this has just been released. Go download it now and start monitoring your AWS deployments using System Center Operations Manager.
There you go. And they say that, you know, we have trouble playing with others. The last one that we have is actually something near and dear to my heart. I've been a big fan of the cluster-in-a-box technology. And that's part of the technology that's available now with some new integrated features with Windows Server 2012. Part of that is the cluster-in-a-box out-of-box experience, or as we call it internally, the UBI. Affectionately. The UBI, or the cluster-in-a-box, out-of-box experience, as I chronicled in episode number 51 with a lovely 30-minute or 27, 28-minute demo of how that actually works, shows you how to set up a cluster of a two-node cluster out of the box as if you literally plugged in the power and the network cables and basically went from there, all from one console. Well, we've released a documentation how to build it, how to work with it, how to use it for our OEM manufacturers, and we've also now extended it so that it does two new very important things. The The first thing is it makes it so that you can actually go up to 4 nodes or 3 nodes as opposed to just the 2 nodes, which is what the first limitation was. The second thing that it does is it also will go through and ask you as part of the wizard process if there are any, if you're joining an existing domain or if you need to create a new domain. And the neat thing is, if you say create a new domain, it'll go off and basically build you a virtual VM of a domain controller of the domain information that you parse it through the wizard interface to be able to create this lovely long list of information that will basically just simply on reboot, make the domain, make the VM, make the virtual network, and then pop it up and you're all set to go. So even easier, appliances out of the box. Plug them in, turn them on, you've got yourself your own greenfield domain if you need to, and a cluster built and done like that.
Very nice. And we'll include the links to all of these right at the bottom of the screen.
You got it.
Well, with that, we're going to move on to the demo, and we're actually the host for the demo as well.
You're the expert that's going to be talking?
It's cluster time, you know it.
Awesome
so,
stuff.
Very shortly, we're going to show you an end-to-end deployment of using Hyper-V Server, the Microsoft iSCSI Target, Windows Remote Server Administration Tools, and a whole bunch of other free utilities that you can download today and actually go deploy a Hyper-V cluster. So stay tuned. We'll jump to the demo now. Welcome back to the Ed Show. So today we have a special guest, ourselves, and we're really going to show you a common scenario that we often hear about from our customers, but no one's really kind of gone through this end-to-end demo to set it up. So here's the scenario. You want to try these Microsoft products, right? You already have Active Directory in your environment, like most people do, and you just want to try this for free. So what we're going to show you today is how to go and build a highly available Hyper-V cluster, in theory as many nodes as you want. For our example, we'll do 2 nodes, and also configure free shared storage using an iSCSI target.
No, wait a second. You've been saying the word free an awful
lot. A lot of free.
Here,
you don't hear that from Microsoft that often, right?
So is this stuff truly free that we're talking about?
It is. Now? So next, I'm actually going to show you exactly where you can go download all of these.
Okay.
So I'm going to show you 4 free tools that you can do to manage this full scale-up environment.
And this isn't an eval that we're talking about.
This is not an eval. So you can download this, configure this today, and it will continue running forever.
You got
So there's no 90-day expiration, 180-day expiration. This is completely free, and you get to keep it.
But I will caveat this by saying the guest OSs that are running are not free. You must have them licensed.
That is true. If you are running Windows
so you
in your guest OS, but in theory, hey, yeah, you could run any type of free Linux distribution and have that end-to-end throughout the stack.
Yep.
But of course, we want to use it in our Microsoft products, so you can pretend you didn't hear that.
You got it.
So let's get started and quickly review these 4 tools here. So very first one is Hyper-V Server 2012. Now, Rick, why don't you quickly just tell us, what's the difference between Hyper-V Server and Windows Server 2012?
So the easiest thing about this one here is simply HVS, or Hyper-V Server, is fully functional, absolutely not crippled with what you can do with it, not limited to how much RAM it can use, not limited to how many nodes you have inside a cluster environment. It's all the exact same as server, standard server data center. But it does not have any virtualization rights to be able to run any guests, whereas standard server has 4. If you buy 2 procs, it's basically 2 a proc, and data center is unlimited. And the other thing with HVS or Hyper-V Server is that it does not give you the ability to do any other roles except for virtualization, which is Hyper-V, and that's it.
That's a really important point. So a lot of people say, you know, why are we giving away this server for free?
Right.
It doesn't come with file services. It doesn't come with Active Directory.
It doesn't even come with a GUI interface, just so you know.
That is true.
But it can be fully remotely managed using RSAT tools, which you'll talk about in just a minute.
Yep, we're going to show some of that. So very first thing, the Hyper-V Server. And you can go to Microsoft.com/HVS.
Yep.
It'll take you to this page. You click on the free download link. It will ask you to register some personal information, and complete this form, click submit, and then you get the link to download the ISO.
Yep.
Now the next tool here is the Microsoft iSCSI Target 3.3. And since we're going to be deploying a cluster, clusters require some type of shared storage. Now that could be a SAM, such as Fibre Channel, iSCSI, Serial Attached SCSI.
And those aren't free.
And those are not free.
Just so you know.
Or you could use the new Hyper-V SMB 3.0 for virtual machines, depending on what exactly you're clustering.
But that would require that you have the license for Server 2012, Data Center, or Standard Edition to be able to run the SMB 3 scale-up file server.
Absolutely. But this, again, completely free download. So you can go and install this on older versions of Server, pretty much anything you have running in the environment that uses the regular Windows installation packages.
But older versions of Server are also not free.
Ah, that's a good point as well.
Just covering ourselves here for the LCA department.
got a lot of caveats here.
Now, if you were to use this with the 180-day eval of Server 2012, The iSCSI target is actually built in to Server 2012, whereas in 2008 R2 and 2008, you would have to download this free option to be able to install on one of those two guys. So just a minor point of clarification.
That's important. But again, you know, if we're still using the eval, it's got to worry about that expiration here.
Yep.
So a lot of trade-offs here. What we're trying to do is find you the cheapest long-term solution. Now, next product I'm going to show you here is Remote Desktop Connection Manager. This allows you to manage remote desktop connections at scale with a very easy-to-use interface. And I'm going to be using this as I'm going to be jumping around across multiple different clusters and other environments.
Yeah. Now, personally, I'm not a huge fan of this particular tool. I'm more of a traditional MSTSC, Microsoft Terminal Services, or Remote Desktop Services client to be able to point into one. But you do make a very good point, because you'll be jumping around between different groupings of servers. The RDC Man utility or tool is quite effective at that.
Absolutely. And then the final one we're going to talk about is Remote Server Administration Tools for Windows 8. Why don't you give a quick overview on that one?
RSAT is the absolute bomb. Beautiful, the bomb solution for anything to do with remote management of servers. You must be an administrator to be able to get full functionality, obviously. You're going to be targeting servers that are running Windows Server 2012. You can also target 2008 R2 and 2008, provided you add some extra pieces onto it. But for the most part, anything you do to manage your 2012 servers, including Hyper-V server, should all be able to be accomplished remotely using the RSAT tools. You shouldn't need to log on to doing stuff. Now, some of the steps we're going to be doing, we are going to log on to those local boxes to be able to do some iSCSI stuff configuration. But you'll notice us switch over to doing the RSAT utility to be able to finish off the rest of it, just because it's the way you manage your servers. Doesn't matter if they have a GUI interface or not. It all can be done from a Windows 8 client.
Absolutely. Great point. Whether that's a laptop, a desktop machine, Windows 8 client, fully supported.
Or even a virtual guest.
Absolutely. Well, next thing we're going to do is we're actually going to go and just show you what the initial installation of Hyper-V server looks like. So from my laptop, I'm going to go kick off client Hyper-V. So I'm going to run a virtual machine directly off my laptop here. And this opens up Hyper-V Manager. Now, I have this this server here. And what I've done on this node is on this server here, I've basically created a new virtual machine, and I've just attached the ISO file as the operating system that it's going to boot from. So when this virtual machine first starts up, we'll connect to it. It's basically reading that ISO file that I downloaded directly.
And again, this could very easily be, if this was a physical piece of hardware, simply make a bootable USB stick, boot off that USB stick on the physical hardware to be able to go in and do the exact same steps you're going to be doing now in a virtual space.
Absolutely, yep. Now, as this boots up, you're going to see that installation is pretty simple. What's the language? Hey, click install. And what's going to happen now, you know, if I have multiple partitions, it will give me options around that. As I'm just running on a single VHD, it's just going to go and install this straight from the boot. Now, we're going to let this run in the background because, of course, we're going to go cook and show style and already work on a pre-installed environment. So I'm going to click custom, select my space, click confirm, and then standard installation.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead. Go.
On regular new hardware, this takes about 15 to 20 minutes or so, if that.
Pretty quick. And one big difference between the regular version of Hyper-V server and full version of Windows Server, much smaller footprint.
Yeah.
This
downloads
1.7 gigabytes.
Don't forget, no GUI interface, as you'll see in just a moment. And it does require that you get comfortable with the command line initially for some stuff.
That's right. So let's go back to Remote Desktop Connection Manager now. And what we can do here is we could go ahead and actually log into a machine that's already been installed. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go and add a new server. So I'm going to click Add Server. I'm going to call it Simon P. Hyper-V.
Very original name.
Very original. Now, the cool thing about Remote Desktop Connection Manager, it stores passwords in a hierarchical fashion. And so what this means is I've gone and configured my main password at the root. Any new virtual machine that I add will automatically go and pull that same password. So if I double click on this brand new connection, never configured a password, other remote desktop information, it automatically logs me straight in.
Sweet. You know, that's something I didn't even know.
Very streamlined, huh? So this is why I love this. Never have to think about my passwords. And you can store multiple different passwords. I have a different set of credentials down here for a different file server I manage.
Oh, yeah.
You could store them in different hierarchies, and it will still automatically filter down.
Nice.
So next thing we're going to do is, this is what you get as soon as you log into Hyper-V server. So pretend I've gone through the installation. This is, boom, it boots up. And you're going to notice both the command line window, standard cmd.exe, as well as this sconfig.command.
Yep.
What exactly is this, Rick?
Sconfig is basically a master script that was created back in 2008 R2 timeframe for when Server Core came around to give you the base configuration options needed to be able to get a system that's newly installed, easily named, connected to the network, and most importantly, joined to the domain. That's the basic stuff of what you want to do with it. And so sconfig comes up by default on Hyper-V Server because that's the only interface that it has to be able to do anything. And obviously here I can see that you've already named the computer, and you've also already got it so that you have, more than likely, I can't see though, your network settings have been defined already and you're all set to go. Are you domain joined as of yet or not? It looks like you are domain joined already.
Yes, I am domain joined. Yeah. So that's one of the steps that I had to go through to, in order to be able to show this remote connection and everything. So yeah. Yes, I did go through the steps of joining
so
the domain.
Literally, it'd be choosing option number 2 for changing the computer name. Once it reboots, comes up again, it would be a number 1 to join the domain and work group. And then possibly you'd want to go in and configure a static IP address, which would be under number 8 for network settings.
That's correct. And as you navigate to this menu, it's much easier than a standard command. Let's actually take a look at the network settings here. So I say 8. Show me my network settings. It gives me a list of the available network adapters.
Yep.
In this case, only have one. Not super interesting. But just using this basic navigation menu, I can pull the information that I need for this basic type of administration.
Yep.
I'm going to go back to my main menu. Okay, so now I have my Hyper-V Server 1. It's domain joined. I have my Hyper-V Server 2. It's also domain joined. So next thing we're going to do is actually go and connect this to our storage. First thing we're going to do is actually go and configure that storage. So what I've done over here, I have a brand new server. And on this brand new server, I'm going to go and install the new the iSCSI download.
Again, the only reason why you have to install the iSCSI download is because you're using 2008R2.
That's correct.
It's built into 2012. And I thought it was rather ironic it's a brand new server with 2008R2, but I'll leave that for the peanut gallery.
Great. So I've gone and uninstalled this. I'm then going to go and kick off my 64-bit iSCSI target installation.
Now, what's the difference between iSCSI target and iSCSI initiator?
Great question. So we get that a lot. Now, basically, working with an iSCSI storage array requires two pieces. It requires the actual target, which is the collection of information, the collection of disks as a central repository. And then it has the initiators, which are basically the lightweight clients that go and connect to that backend storage.
Right.
So there's basically a single target, multiple initiators connecting to that target.
And the reason why we're using iSCSI and not DAS, or direct attached storage, is because we have to make this network accessible disk accessible to two different nodes at the same time. Right?
That's correct, because we're ultimately going to be deploying a cluster out of this.
Right.
So I click install, confirm, and the installation only takes about 20 seconds. And so what we've done, we've downloaded basically a free shared storage environment that we can then use for our cluster, for our free Hyper-V server. Click finish, and now we've gone ahead and we've configured, or we've set up, or we, sorry, we've installed our iSCSI target. So next thing we're going to do is actually go and create some disks on our iSCSI target. So I'm going to confirm, and this launches the iSCSI software target. Now what I'm going to do here is first I'm just going to check how much remaining hard drive space I have. So in this case I have about 173 gigs free, so quite a lot of space.
So I also need to clarify, the iSCSI target has to be is going to be exposing its direct attached storage or DAS
out
to the network. That's why he checked his local disk to see how much head space they had left, because the target will basically be identifying the files that are going to represent the disks based on the local storage.
That's absolutely correct. So yep.
It gets a kind of a space time continuum warped in just a minute here.
Cluster confusing. So first thing we're going to do once we get the target up and running is basically create a new iSCSI target. And it's just going to be something with a friendly name to help us try to identify this. So in this case, we'll call this the Edge Demo Target. We'll click Next. We can skip providing it with a description. And then it asks for an IQN identifier. Now, this is basically said, what name do you want to specify this particular target so that other people can go and talk to it? And by default, I always use the local name, so I just select dot. And that will give it the default naming. Click Finish. And now we've gone ahead and we basically have this target. So think of this as a way for us to go and point other servers to this one particular disk. The next thing we have to do, though, is actually create the disks that live on this target. So what we're going to do here is say create a new virtual disk. And now it asks us for a name. So I'm going to go C shared disk1.vhd. I'm going to copy this So I can create one or two more disks next. Get to provide an amount of storage, so we'll give it 20 gigs. Give it a description. Click Next, click Finish. And it's going to go ahead and go create our first disk. Let's go quickly do that twice more. Now, the next disk that I'm going to create, though, this might throw some people off. I'm going to create a 1 gigabyte disk.
Okay.
Why would we go create a 1 gigabyte disk?
Why do you make a smaller one?
So we're going to do this because it's going to be our Quorum storage disk, our witness disk, as part of our cluster.
So it doesn't need to be large.
Minimum 512 megabytes. Right. That's right. And basically what this will do, since we're going to be deploying a two-node cluster, this is going to be basically used for arbitration as far as if these two nodes cannot communicate with each other, which of them should stay online, and which one should not run any workloads. I'm going to call this our Quorum disk. We have our second one, and then we're just going to create a final one here as well, so that we have multiple clustered disks. And we're ultimately going to turn these into CSV disks as well, cluster shared volumes, so that we can have distributed access across all of our nodes to our VMs. Click Finish. And so what we've now done is we basically created these three different disks that we can then use by multiple servers using this as a single iSCSI target, a single location.
Now, other storage options that are available, because for instance, in the cluster in the box demonstration that I did in episode number 51 and talk about it otherwise, you can use shared SCSI or shared SAS disks that are out there.
That's correct.
Shared serially attached disks. Provided they basically have networking connectivity to the rest of the nodes that are involved. And you can also
fiber channel over Ethernet as
right,
well.
So either over Ethernet or over fiber channel HBA cards.
Yep.
Obviously, those are not free. You have to buy those and use those. Basically, when you have it up and running, you've got shared disk, which is the requirement for clustering. People do this. Now, you and I had a debate earlier on about the whole concept of Server 2012 with storage groups, it's not storage groups, with SMB3 taking place with scale-up file server. Is that kind of the area that we're going into as an option for here or not?
You know what? We're not going to go down that path. The reason why, when we're using the SMB 3.0 file shares, that's a feature of Windows Server, the full edition.
Right.
Because you still need the full file services and everything for that.
Right.
So for the sake of this demo, why we're still using the iSCSI target, so that you don't need to go and acquire that, you know, full version of Windows Server.
Correct. But as a completely viable option?
Absolutely.
It is phenomenal. You are able to have multiple host nodes inside your cluster, up to 8 nodes for a scale file server, that make it so that if one particular node goes down and the VMs are open by your Hyper-V cluster and they happen to be shared on that one SMB share, the other nodes simply pick it up and there's not even a heartbeat missed as far as the drives are working or considered. Whereas an iSCSI target, if this guy goes down,
it is still a single point of failure.
It's a single point of failure. So that's, again, architecturally, we're going with a simple demonstration right now of simply having a shared disk made from commodity systems right now.
Absolutely. Great point. So now, next thing we're going to do here is we are going to go ahead and actually go and launch the iSCSI configuration using our Hyper-V server here. Now, Rick, you mentioned earlier there's no GUI. Let's elaborate on that as I go launch this.
So, with Hyper-V server, there is no GUI itself. You have to use sconfig to basically join the domain. A Server 2012 box, once it joins the domain, already has remote administration turned on, does not have remote desktop turned on, and assuming that you are an administrator, you can basically run your RSAT tools against it. There literally is no difference in what you can do remotely with RSATs with Server Manager than if you're locally signed onto the box using Server Manager. And you and I were actually digging around during this demo to show you if we could figure out how we can do a lot of this iSCSI target initial configuration stuff. And it would actually end up having to be done during the setup process of this box, which would require more automation for us, which we didn't do for this particular one. So you're actually going to show us how to kick off the iSCSI initiator configuration, which will allow you to view your iSCSI targets to be able to get stuff done.
That's correct. Yep. And so what we're looking at here from our two nodes that we're going to be connecting to, this is the initiator.
Yep.
And so there's a bit of a back and forth that needs to happen between our initiator and our target, where basically the initiator says, I want to connect. The target says, OK, you can connect. And then the initiator will actually then go and connect. So a bit of a back and forth between the two.
You can put security levels into this as well that require MSChap authentication back and forth between these guys if you really wanted to. Or you can put in restrictions for who is allowed to attach up to them based on IP address or based on computer name.
So what I did here, I entered the name of our iSCSI target. So on my first node and on my second node, I'm going to say Simon Cloud SC12. Hit Quick Connect. Click Done. And so basically what this does is this makes a request to our iSCSI target saying, hey, these two servers now want to go and connect to you. So now I'm going to go back to my iSCSI target. Look at the properties of this target. Look at the initiators and say, I want to now accept two new requests. So from here, I can say I want to browse, find my two requests, and we can see that Hyper-V1 and Hyper-V2 have now made a request to this target to say, I want to connect to you.
Now see, there you just taught me something there. I never knew that it actually stored the previous request for people attaching up to it, because what I would always do is I would actually go in and limit this by IP address or fully qualified domain name of the initiators.
So multiple discovery or initiation options.
Yeah. So basically this saves you having to learn the IQN or the iSCSI qualified name.
Absolutely. I'm not going to learn any IQNet. IQN.
So I used to avoid the IQN by simply using IP address restrictions or fully qualified domain name restrictions, which is available under the advanced options ahead of time. I would normally configure my target and then place the restrictions in ahead of time to say only these IP addresses can connect and be shown this particular disk, and only these computer names could connect and show me this type of disk. So, touche to you, my friend.
Make it a little simple here.
Yeah.
Well, the next prompt that we get here, it says, hey, you've assigned multiple initiators to this one disk. What's up with that? Well, it basically says if you're doing this for a cluster, no problem. Otherwise, you want to check what you're doing. Since we are clustering this, click OK. Click OK. And now our target's saying, yes, I will go and accept your request. So final thing we have to do here is go back, and one more time, we're going to go say, OK, now that it will accept my request, I'm going to go and say connect. We now see it's connected. Logon is successful. Click done.
And this is a filtering mechanism that the iSCSI target uses to know which disk it should be showing to which iSCSI initiators. And so basically we're putting a very simple layer of connection restrictions. We're not putting any level of authentication for security or for passwords, which you could add on if you wanted to.
That's right. So basically what we've done now is we've gone and connected our target so they would see the disk if we went and opened up Disk Manager. So now what we're going to do is go and actually initialize our disks. So we've configured them so that the nodes can actually see the target, but we've got to bring these online and basically make them functional.
Mm-hmm.
So what first thing we're going to do is go and start PowerShell here. Do this on our first node, and we'll go ahead and get our list of disks, and we should have three disks that are returned to us.
I noticed the PowerShell command, you're only looking for the iSCSI types.
That's correct. So we did filter it by bus type equals iSCSI.
Right.
Next thing we're going to do is go ahead and initialize disk 2, 3, and 4. Now, one other thing to note is we're able to do this just on one of the nodes. We don't actually have to go and initialize the disk on every node. We'll basically go through them serially, do 2, then do 3, then do 4. And there, all of our disks have been formatted.
Now, thankfully, we're going to jump out of the command line and jump into RSAT tools now, because this command line stuff's giving me a headache.
That's right. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to go connect to my Windows 8 client box, and this is where I freshly installed RSAT. Now, from here, what you can see is this is just a standard Windows 8 installation, right? Nothing special here, but we have the ability to go and launch Server Manager. So if I go take a look at my apps, I can see my standard ones, my productivity ones, and over here you can see Server Manager.
I just type it myself. Just type. Server Manager. There you go. Fast filter.
There we go. We'll launch it here. Now what we're going to do here is we're going to say that we want to go and add some hosts to manage. So what we can say here is add servers and go and specify the name of a server that we want to manage remotely. So I could add my first host and my second host. Now, as soon as I'm doing this remote server management, we have the ability to get this full graphical user interface of Server Manager. Click OK. It's going to confirm my credentials and then add them as objects that I can manage. Now, what you're also going to see down here is since we have Hyper-V installed on some of these hosts, we actually have the ability to do some basic Hyper-V operations. Now, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go and actually remotely go and install some features. So what we could do here is click on my first host, and we can say add roles or features. And I'm going to go and install the failover clustering feature remotely.
Now, don't forget, that's a feature, not a role. I always look for it under roles. I never find it because it's a feature.
That is correct. So we could skip our roles. And as you'll notice, since we're using Hyper-V Server, the complete list of roles does not appear. So you don't have file services, Active Directory, web. Oops. Click next. We'll go to our features. And here we could see we can go and install failover clustering. Now let's go and make sure that failover clustering is enabled on both of our servers. Role-based installation, node 2, and add the failover clustering role. Now, it automatically gives me the same options if I was installing it using regular server manager, including the remote administration. Click next, click install, and this is relatively quick and does not require a reboot. Now we'll go ahead and we'll close this. I will minimize this, wait for it to finish. And from here, we could go ahead and actually launch Failover Cluster Manager. So I'm going to go Failover Cluster Manager. And one more time, this is running on a Windows 8 client machine. This is not server. This is the free download for remote server administration tools. Now, next thing I'm going to do here is now that I've gone and added the cluster feature, we get to just deploy a cluster, same way we always would. So we'll go ahead and we'll say validate a cluster. Always got to validate as a best practice. Click next, enter our names. Node 1, node 2. Click add. It's going to verify that the cluster feature has been installed.
There's another new thing I didn't know. You could put commas.
You
in
can.
Names.
You can comma separate to have it all filter at once.
You just speed it up a little. Information, Mr. Perriman.
Then we have the option to validate everything or just a few tests that I select. In this case, let's just test the the Hyper-V tests, which are brand new for Windows Server 2012, to make sure that my hosts are fully compatible.
And this is only just because we know all the rest of stuff's going to work, because this is a demo environment.
Absolutely.
You should go through the entire validation wizard.
You need that for a fully supported environment. And like usual, you get full access to the reports, give you the details of the configuration. Based on all this information, I look like I'm good to go to build a cluster. So I could say, create the cluster now, using my validated nodes. We're going to say, what's going to be the name of this cluster? So we'll call this Simon's Edge Demo. Click Next. Add all available storage. Click Finish. And we are good to go. Woo! So that was a lot that we walked through here, from literally downloading the components to installing it to building a cluster. And again, really kind of have to emphasize here, everything is free. That's the key point. But there is just still one requirement we cannot forget to mention. There's a dependency on Active Directory here.
Yes,
so anytime you build a cluster, we still need that dependency on Active Directory. And we've assumed, since we're actually doing remote management, connecting as part of the domain, that we do have an Active Directory infrastructure already in place.
Right. Now, with 2012, it is better, as far as clustering is concerned, with Active Directory domain controllers being present and active during the initialization of the cluster, once it's already done and up and running. In the past, you used to have to make sure that the DC was always available when node 1 came up out of the multi-node cluster, otherwise you'd have error messages. Now it's been once it's initialized, you no longer have those issues anymore. That's really kind of about it. Like, now that we have this up and going, and we have Hyper-V role installed, and the cluster's done being created, is it literally just now a matter of going in and using the failover cluster manager to go off and make your highly available virtual machine?
That's absolutely. It? That's what you would do. You would just go back into this as in a full-fledged failover cluster manager.
Just like any other time, you now would be able to go into failover cluster manager and to make a new role that's a highly available virtual machine from scratch, or you could import existing virtual machines from the Hyper-V nodes that are already up and running.
That's correct. So hopefully you learned a lot here. I hope you learned a lot about the free tools, how you can really build your own environment, but more importantly, keep it permanent. Again, these are not eval bits. These are full versions that you could take, you could start using today, and the links for all of these tools be right at the bottom of the screen. Well, with that, hope you enjoyed the demo. Hope you learned a lot. I know Rick certainly learned a bunch here.
Yeah, there's some new little tips and tricks. You always learn new ways of doing things when you talk with other technology folks. That's all I can say.
Well, thanks for your time, and we'll see you shortly. Welcome back. Well, I hope you found that informative and a great way to start really trying to experiment with some of the Hyper-V and cluster technologies at zero cost.
You got it. And don't forget, try this at home, play around with it, get your hands dirty. It's not that difficult to do.
Great. Now, if you want to learn more, give us feedback, comments, send us an email. tnedge@microsoft.com.
You can also reach us on the Twitters @tnedge is the way that we monitor that one there. And obviously, comment down below, give us star ratings, let us know what we should be doing in future shows. And if you like this one, if you had some comments or suggestions on how to make it better.
Sounds good. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
See ya.